Hello, and welcome to this latest Fraser of Allender podcast. I'm Emma Congreve, and today's podcast is part of an ongoing project looking into the support and opportunities available to adults with learning disabilities in Scotland. Throughout this project, we've been exploring a range of issues, and one that has come up repeatedly is transitions to adulthood and the support that young people with learning disabilities are given during this crucial stage in their lives. This is something that's important to young people with a variety of additional support needs, including those with a learning disability. It's also a timely subject at the moment as there's a transitions bill currently going through the Scottish Parliament. Later in the podcast, we'll hear from a group of young people with additional support needs who will talk about their experiences of transitions. But first, I'd like to welcome Scott Richardson-Reed from the Association for Real Change, or ARC Scotland. So Scott, can you tell us about the work that ARC Scotland does?
Hi, it's so great to be asked along to talk to you on your podcast. So ARC Scotland is a training specialist and we advance knowledge and practice in policy, health and social care for the benefit of people with learning disabilities and other additional support needs. And I work within ARC Scotland, Association for Real Change Scotland, in a project called the Scottish Transitions Forum. The Scottish Transitions Forum came about because, well, transitions was a real issue and has been a massive issue and is an ongoing issue to get right in Scotland for young people. And the Scottish Transition Forum brings together the whole range of different professionals to bring their expertise to bear on the problem, along with couching and making sure that parents and young people's voices are at the very center of the conversations that we have about transitions. So everything we do as a membership organization is based around the desires and wants of parents and young people.
So for those who aren't familiar, what do you mean by transitions to adulthood?
What we mean, it's a bit of a jargony word, I'll give you that. What we do mean with transitions into adulthood is the time that a young person becomes a young adult, really. So we view transitions from the age of 14 to 25, and we look at it in a multifaceted way. So the idea that transitions is not just about moving into education and employment, but for a young person with a disability or an additional support need, it's also about potentially moving into your own house, a change in benefits, a change in care, change in healthcare, change in transport arrangements, a change in education potentially, if you can get a placement that's suitable, or taking up employment, if that's even possible, given the kind of difficulties people have stepping into work with additional support needs and disabilities due to most of all the stigma that is around young people with additional support needs. As well as kind of looking at resilience and all of the well-being things that go underneath that. So kind of like, how tough are they with making their choices, or like how assured are they with making the choices that they need to make as they turn into young adults, and all of the support that surrounds that. So it's not just an education and employment perspective. It's also a kind of social work, health, allied health professional, third sector, job coach, advocate, befriending service, third sector, voluntary service, the whole kind of nine yards that wraps any of these young people that they move into transition. So that is primarily why it's really difficult to get right.
You said that transition planning should apply to people aged 14 to 25. Why is it so important to get transition support right for people in this age bracket?
It's really important because it's really, really complicated. They've had services that have potentially been surrounding them and looking out for them, potentially all their young adult life. And it's the time of transition when they move into adult healthcare services, adult support services, and the adult world with all the things that kind of goes along with it. That includes their adult rights and advocacy and all of these things. So it's really, really crucial that at this time of a young person's life, when they step into the adult world, we make sure that all of the support that surrounds them is guided by them for what they need to achieve and their objectives, rather than done to them. And that can be a really difficult element on transitions for professionals, as we all tend to have a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to try and like fix things for people and put things in place without really listening to the outcomes or the wishes and the dreams and the goals of the young person and the family at the center of that. And we tend to focus more solely on the supports that surround the young person rather than where does the young person's dreams and wishes fit within this environment, if you like.
So what does good transition planning look like? I know that Arts Scotland have documented this in the Principles of Good Transitions. Could you tell us a bit about that?
The Scottish Transitions Forum created the Principles of Good Transitions, which is now developed into a digital platform that parents can and young people can use, and a practice framework, which we are also trialling in a number of local authorities across Scotland. So the Principles of Good Transitions, sorry, came about because people were discussing why transitions didn't work. We kind of got stuck in a place where everyone was talking about why things didn't work rather than what we could do to fix the problem and the problems that we know exist for young people in transitions with additional support needs and other young people really in Scotland. So the Principles of Good Transition takes all of the current legislation that exists within Scotland and distills it into a kind of somewhat easy to read document for professionals to follow. And when we say professionals, we mean everyone from healthcare, social care, education, employment, third sector, voluntary organisations, gosh, you name it, there is a piece in that for you. It's also slightly written in favour of parental understanding, though it's not perfect, so we're currently redrafting it for parents to know what their rights are and what to expect in the transitions process. So what we did do with the Principles of Good Transitions, we spoke to parents and young people about what they thought would be the solution. What do they need to make things better in transition for them? And then we looked at these different principles and we made sure we spoke to the legal framework around it. So in terms of what makes a good transition, currently, it's planning and decision making should be carried out in a person-centered way. And by that, we mean truly person-centered way and not a different kind of set of terminology that's used. That support should be coordinated across all services, and that's all services, not just from education and social work, it's all the rest of them too. Planning should start early at age 14 and continue up to age 25. That all young people should get the support they need. As austerity has hit, more and more young people have been squeezed out of effective transitions, planning processes and health and social care support because they don't meet the strict criteria. This isn't really a good thing for anybody. We find that a lot of young people who have undergone a really, really robust and brilliant planning process, for instance, can then not engage with any services outside of that because the services don't exist or they're not eligible for a budget that can meet these needs. So in terms of choice, it's really, really limited and really, really difficult. A lot of work has been done on the back of this, and there's the Independent Living Transitions Fund, or ILF Transitions Fund, that bridges some of that gap for young people. And there's also a bill currently going through Parliament that looks at the planning process around that too. So other principles that we believe should be at the heart of transitions planning is young people and parents and carers must have access to the information they need in a format that they need in an appropriate way. You just don't give loads of people information at the start of the transition and then step away. You need to, the topic needs to be introduced slowly and proportionately to their needs. Even though it's a transition for young people, we also need to recognise that actually it's also a transition for the whole family. So families and carers and siblings also need support. And within that, we also need to recognise that transition is also the transition for the workers that surround the young person too. So everybody needs support within the transitions process, but the focus should remain on the family and the young person. And finally, we think that there should be more accountability in Scotland for transitions, and it should sit within and be accountable for and sit within various policy arms and legs of things, because transitions, as reflecting back on the conversation, is a huge issue, and it's not just one of education and employment or training, it's also one that encompasses all of the other things that impact a young person's life as they move between 14 and 25. So everybody should have a kind of question around, how does my policy area fit with the policy area that kind of comes next to it or rubs up against it in terms of transition and transition from one place to another?
Thanks, Scott. This is clearly something that's so important to get right, and it was really interesting to hear about the work you've been doing. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for inviting me along.
Now, we're delighted to be joined by a number of people who are going to talk about their experiences of transition to adulthood. So we have on the line, Ramiz, Laura, Claire, Ryan, and Kieran. So thank you all for joining us. And one of the first things we want to ask is thinking back to when you were kind of at school and starting to think about leaving school and what was going to come next. So what were you thinking about at that stage, and what kind of support were you getting? So I'll come to Kieran first, if that's okay.
What support was he getting? I think near the end, I got helped by a charity called Thistle. Ruiz will be familiar to them as well, but like, they were like the charity that helped me, like, you know, like, you know, help me with my dreams and when I would leave school, so what I'd want to achieve and all that. And I remember a guy called Alexander. He kind of inspired me to go around schools as well and, you know, inspire other people to dream their life.
Thanks, Kieran. Laura, how about you?
Well, Kieran is really tapping on something that's important to me, because in education, there's these practical examples of support for young people. So like, I moved to art school after high school. So mine was about like funding access, and there was loads of people to talk to about SAS. And the induction process, like, I was able to find out what freshers was on the website and kind of how to get a matriculation card and stuff. And I think like people with additional support needs have had positive and negative experience with like SAS and careers advisors and all of that, but it's often the most practical support for a young person that's important to me. And that's like, when I say that, I mean really contextual support that considers realities and options for marginalized groups and is super nuanced. So like, my own experience was that it took like one trusted adult that really made sure that not only would I like practically achieve it, but mentally and financially and physically. So although it's probably against guidelines, it was things like, by the way, Laura, did you know there's this really great cinema next to your uni and you love those kind of films? So I don't think there's enough of that. And I hear a lot of planning, like further bolstering the services that are already there. And that kind of, yeah, speaks to what I think Kieran said, which is like, for some people, that's the stuff around it, whether that's independent travel or
helping that, so that navigation of a new circumstance, you know, and helping, you know, you work out how you will adapt to it. So Claire, is there anything you'd like to add here?
When I was leaving school, I knew that I wanted to go to university. I knew that since about my fourth year of uni, of high school, sorry. And a lot of people said to me, I wouldn't manage it, it'd be too much. So I didn't feel like I had that support at school to look into what options were available, apart from a few teachers that were really good. But a lot of the information I had to look up myself, or my parents, I had their full support, but it was a lot to look up that other people's had the help with. So I felt supported through university because they were on board with everything. But at high school, I just didn't feel like I had that support. And I was transitioning through a lot at that point in time because I need a personal assistant to help me with my daily life. So I was transitioning from child social care to adult social care, from child health care to adult health care.
Mm.
It was a lot of transitionings all at once.
Yeah, so we've heard that from a lot of people, Clara, that there can, particularly with regards to social care, there can be a cliff edge really when you
yeah.
you come to the end of the child services. So I mean, that sounds like it was your experience that there just wasn't that kind of planning in place to transition you into the support you needed as an adult. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have those kind of feelings of facing a bit of an unknown or a cliff edge as they approach the end of their time at school? Ramiz, do you want to come in here?
Sure thing, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I did go to a special needs school, and there were some staff that didn't quite fully understand what autism really is. A lot of people in this situation, as soon as they hear the word autism or even with other additional support needs, rather than looking at their hopes and aspirations, they're quick at looking at the actual, they're very quick at labeling the person. And that is something that I feel is unjust, needs to stop. And surely by now, you'd expect everyone to understand what autism really is. Because with autism, it's like you have a brain. You might take time developing your knowledge, your skills, talents, and experiences, but all we need is like extra time. We need our own pace. We need our own space. And eventually, it's like, take an analogy, like if you're traveling to one place of the city to another, there's so many different routes. You can either walk it, you can either cycle it, drive, fly, even like you have an aircraft, or you're lucky enough to afford an aircraft, then yeah, you could travel by helicopter and also various different modes of transport. But no matter what, you still get to your destination in the end. And when I found out that some of the members of staff still approach us people who have additional support needs, their instinct is to talk to us in a patronising way. And not only that, I still think it's dehumanising. It's like we're being treated like objects rather than actual person, living individuals.
Yeah, and that you say that, yeah, the misunderstanding that people have over these things, it's staggering that it's still the case, really. I really like your analogy there of different routes to get to the same place. I'm going to bring in our last guest now. So Ryan, I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on how the system works and your experiences transitioning into adulthood.
Well, it's one of those things where you have to really look at what's going on, understand what works well, but what can work better. Because it's like, it's not just, oh, everything's rubbish. It's no good. You need to improve everything. It's isolating and understanding issues, because if the issues are still happening, there's like certain hiccup points that you can find. Like for instance, when I went through my transition from Abercorn Secondary School, which was a school for people with special needs, onto a 2-year transitional course at City of Glasgow College for young people with additional support needs, what we found is that there was a big lack of information, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, and we didn't know who to turn to for information. So it meant that what should have been a relaxing summer was actually a summer of stress, misinformation, miscommunication, lack of understanding and information, and just a lot of disruption and from us for you know, everything that was going on. Because there wasn't a clear line of communication in the weeks, you know, in the months and weeks leading up to when I was leaving secondary school. So because of that, I felt like I was kind of left under a bus and wasn't, you know, pulled out of it.
Yeah. So it's that uncertainty part of it that's just really difficult. I mean, for
uncertainty and assumption.
Yeah.
In a system of misinformation and assumptions, young people with disability, you can often feel like they're being funneled into things they don't want to do.
Yeah, so it's about people understanding the best way to help you fulfill your own potential. That feels really important, and it's not funneling you in one direction. It's about enabling you, as any young person should expect. What we'd love to hear more about is the work you guys do with ARC and the Scottish Transitions Forum. Kieran, could you tell us more?
I think people might view me as different things, but I always viewed myself as an inspirationist. But that's the one thing I want to do, this project, to inspire people, for people to live their dreams.
Yeah.
Instead of doing something they don't want to do, living life the way they want it, not the way it should be lived.
Laura, what have you got out of working with ARC?
There is a particular way that ARC Scotland have supported us to do this, that's really important to me. ARC Scotland understand how varied transitions is. Like, I really think that being able to talk in depth about, say, my experience with mental health services, or how I've found employment, is just as important as like what an interview was like to get into uni or something. And ARC have understood that for us, and that's been important. And listening to other people has also got me quite excited, remembering the things that like I want to fight for, or what I wish did or didn't happen. Even though we're really varied, I can totally get this idea of not having the right information.
Well, thank you all for taking the time to speak with us today. I have one last question for you. It's really important that people who have direct experience of transitions inform decision making. So if you could put forward one change that would have improved your experience of transitioning into adulthood, what would you put forward? Claire?
I would say that to any transition is to make it person-centered. I feel a lot of times it's just focused on disability and what other people have, like looking at other people and thinking, well, that's best for you too. But looking at the actual person, what their wants and needs are out of life, that would be something to put forward.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because disabilities and additional support needs are part of who you are, but they're not the only part of who you are. So Ryan, let's come to you next.
The thing I would talk about is that the resources are in place to support a good educational transition. With the time and patience, we can make them available to as many young people with additional support needs as possible. It's about how we're going to make them visible. What's the best way of explaining them in a way that makes sense to the general public? Because it's not just the young people who have to understand what this stuff is, the people who are going to be providing it. And that's why the people who are going to provide it, like, be it, you know, professionals, teachers, parents, etc., if they know what can be done to make a transition process better, they will be able to support the child more efficiently. It's about that. It's about a clear and concise line of communication, which allows for information to be more transparent. And because of that, it results in a better transition process. Like, you can't just wing a transition, and you can't just wing a young person's transition process at the end of the day. It's something you have to take time with. It's something you have to invest in. It's something that has to have person-centered planning at the center of the process.
Yeah, so it's. I think what you said there, you can't wing it. Like, you can't wing a transition, because, you know, it only happens once. and it sets you up for what comes next in your life.
And the trick is, it's keeping the doors open so that it's not just a one-and-done shop. You can't just be like one stop and that's it. There's always going to be layers to a transition at the end of the day. Yeah. And that's how you make transition better over time.
I have a solution.
Go on, Karen.
They need a transition team. I think we should be like, you know, like X Factor, you know, they have judge, we should be the judge. Yeah. So we think we're the kind that in this team, so we know he's doing the job right.
I mean, I think you're onto something there, Kieran.
I think
you guys, as I was saying before, like you've got the experience and the knowledge and to actually, you know, be able to help advise on actually what the system should be.
I don't know. Whoever created transition in the first place didn't put it into practice, because maybe in theory it all works, but it doesn't.
Mm. Laura, did you want to come in here?
Well, as usual, I have plenty to say, but from personal experience, I've had to pick one thing for this podcast. I'd ask society, and the government in particular, to consider the impact of framing the attending of higher education as free, when the financial experience of participants can be unexpected and unequal. So I think a more realistic description would manage expectations. And mental health is mentioned a lot to push change in education, but I really mean this. The financial framing factor does impact the freedom that we're afforded and the agency and control of our future.
Yeah. Laura, that's a brilliant point. A really good point for us to take away and think about, particularly, you know, the election is around the corner and all these things are going to be talked about. Let's go to Ramiz for the final word. What change do you want to see, Ramiz?
Yeah, so I feel like disability is we've been brought up to use the word disability, but for additional support needs because that sounds like, because with disability, I always find a word too pessimistic, but with additional support needs, it shows that you can still live your life, but you just require extra support to help you achieve your goals.
Yeah, that's a really powerful point. In fact, you've all made some really thoughtful contributions. So thank you for sharing your experiences with us. Ramiz, do you have something else you wanted to add?
Sure thing, yeah. 2020 has been a 50-50 year. It was devastating with what happened with the coronavirus. Now certain people unfortunately didn't make it to the end of the year. But I did face like mental health issues since being in lockdown, but it's given everyone else a chance as well to sort of, sometimes you have things planned, and one of the highlights of 2020 is educated us of how to think of a plan B option when plan A doesn't work, because since the announcement of lockdown, a lot of our plans have been changed accordingly. So
certainly
there has been a positive skill that has taught even the people who would find things impossible that the impossible become possible in the end.
I think you're right. It's showing people maybe what some things they didn't realize they were capable of, and it's also given a lot of people a chance to stop and reflect about what they want to see different or do different or be different, you know, once things return to something close to normal. I think that's a really good point, Ramiz. Well, thank you all for joining us today, and we'd love to hear from you again soon. As I mentioned at the start, this podcast has been part of an ongoing project looking at some of the support and opportunities available for adults with learning disabilities in Scotland. There's loads more analysis and research on our website if you go to fraserofallander.org. And a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the Fraser of Allander's podcast through all the major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.